You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat Davila. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Pat. How are you?
Excellent. Also joining us tonight is our good friend, Patrick Archibald. Pat, good to talk to you.
Hey, good to talk to you all again.
Yeah, it's been a while, man.
Yeah, it has been a while.
I think we saw each other last at Southeast Linux Fest last year, right? And we're almost coming up on a whole year, so.
Yeah, time flies, doesn't it?
Yep.
Well, since we spoke last time, Dan, I rebuilt my machine. Everything seems to be working pretty well. I haven't had any problems. The only little odd thing that I've noticed is when I originally set up the back end in the Myth Control Center, I didn't set it up originally so that it would be able to allow connections from remote front ends. And it seems that I go in there and I flip it to allow connections from remotes. I set the PIN number and all that, and everything's hunky-dory. The front end connects, no problem. But if I reboot the machine, that switch that I flipped to turn it on resets and I have to go back into the control center and flip it back.
Really?
Yeah, it's really weird. That's about the only little weird negative thing that I've seen so far. Other than that, it's perfect.
Is it running? Well, I guess we should mention too that the Myth 0.24 fix number 2 was released since the last time that we had recorded, and so I'm assuming you're running with all the latest.
Yeah, everything's up to date.
Everything there, right?
Everything's up to date. I wonder if it's a permissions issue. It's a bug, maybe. I'm gonna look to see if there's a bug filed for it, and if I don't see one, I might file it because that's what it sounds like. It sounds like it's a permissions thing, where it's going in, it's turning on It's turning on the MySQL service so that it'll allow remote connections. But when the machine's reset, it's reverting back.
That's really bizarre.
Yeah. But it's not a big deal because I leave my machine on, my back end on, all the time.
Yeah, right. But you shouldn't have to go in and reset that every single time.
Yeah. So it's a weird thing. I'm going to research it and see if it's a known issue or not.
I've just been doing the regular updates going along as well, and I should be getting, I should have all the latest with the Myth 24-2, in there. But what I've noticed recently is that I will delete a recording, and for some reason, I don't know if this is more or less just on the front end, and it does, and just isn't refreshing the screen enough, but I will still see that recording in there for a little while. And I usually have to back out of the screen and come back into it. It doesn't seem to just be doing it in place anymore.
That's the thing, when I push up a piece of software, sometimes people change things and they screw it up. They reintroduce bugs,
Take it from a software developer, man. I that happens from time to time.
Absolutely.
You push something out and something that you may not have foreseen has been affected downstream somewhere or another, And it's unfortunate, that it has to happen. And if you don't get enough testers or whatever, then you're kind of stuck with it, and you can kind of just put out the little fires as they pop up.
Yeah, most of the time it's due to human error. Somebody might check out the wrong version of code, or they pick up something that doesn't have an update applied to it or whatnot. I've done that myself, so it happens.
Oh, me too. Yep.
Hey, if you're not breaking something, you're not doing anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
That's how you learn the damn thing.
some people would call it job security, I guess, right? But too many of those, you're going to be looking for another job, right?
It's a fine line. So, Pat, what have you been up to? You installed, 25, and you've been playing with that?
Yeah, I've been checking it out a little bit. I'm anxious to see what it'll do for us. One of the things I was wanting to do is check out the new services API. I know Dan's been interested in it, too. And so I started out, I went out and went out to the Git repository and pulled down all the code and compiled it and all this kind of stuff. And I was talking with Dan about setting some compiler flags and stuff to get MPEG 4 or something like that going. And turns out that I could have just gone into the Mifbuntu Control Center and chosen to install 25 from there. I didn't know that option was available. But
it might have just been updated recently because they do push out periodically the updated repos as a package. And I think you have to enable that explicitly in the Mifbuntu Control Center after you install it so that you can get the updated repositories. So I wasn't aware of that either. I honestly haven't looked in the control center in quite some time.
Yeah. So I was surprised to see it there. But so anyway, I just started all over. I had a spare front end that I just took, and I said, well, I'm gonna make this my test machine. And so I went out and got a fresh install of Ubuntu 11.10, and then went out and installed the Mifbuntu Control Center, and then went out and enabled the repositories, and then I saw 25 in there, and fired that up, and that went really well, and it's really pretty solid. So once I got that up and running, I went out and just started messing around with the services APIs and found out a couple of different things. But overall, the core package is pretty solid already. So I think the target date is like April 2nd or something like that for Myth 25 to come out.
That's real close.
Oh, I keep looking, but I haven't seen that date anywhere. Where are they mentioning that at?
I saw it on the changelog page out on the wiki. The release notes.
Yeah, they update that.
I keep looking at the roadmap and the timeline, but I haven't been seeing
the release notes have been updating. They've been hitting that lately.
Oh, have they? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep, April 2nd, right at the moment.
That's close. That's real close. It's only a couple months away.
Oh, I'm excited. That should coincide, hopefully, right with the release of the the next LTS version of Mifbuntu, which would be for April as well. And hopefully, if that gets in there, and they'll usually release at least the Ubuntu one at the end of the month. I imagine the other distros will be updating it as soon as they can as well. And that should work out good for rebuilding the machine sometime around the beginning of May, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. I know y'all have updated your backends. I'm still on 10.04 because I like the long-term release. But
Yeah,
next one will be 12.04 for me.
Ooh, I'm excited now about this.
Is there anything that...
As far as the setup goes, I did notice, and maybe this was in there before, but they have a separate menu option for audio now. I think before, wasn't it in the setup, you had audio and video was in the same menu system?
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Was the setup and everything done through the website yet versus going through the, opening up the MIFTV setup or anything like that?
No, it was the same interface, you know.
Okay, I know that's something that they're looking to change is to move all the setup to a web-based setup versus a native app, running on the TV itself.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I kind of messed around with it, but I never did even find that. So, in fact, I don't even have the web interface working right now. So, as far as the setup goes, I just went through the same interface that we've always had. But like I said, I noticed that they broke out the audio from the video, and now so you go in there and they even have a little test routine in the audio setup.
Mm-hmm.
So, once you detect your devices and you select whatever one you want, now you can actually just test it from in there. It just sends out white noise to the left speaker, to the right speaker, or whatever you, 5.1 or whatever.
Oh,
so that's
nice.
Kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've got another menu option to select your sources for your artwork and your metadata.
Mm-hmm.
When I looked at it, it only had one entry each for each option, so I'm not sure what that's supposed to do for you. But
I remember when we had Robert McNamara on, this is a long time ago now that I think about it, that they were talking about implementing that so that you could select if multiple, fan arts and album arts and stuff like that were available, it would allow you to select them I know for one, like my wife and I, we watch this show called Parenthood, and it keeps pulling down the Parenthood movie, cover art for that versus the television show, right? So that'd be one that I'd be able to go in and swap out then.
Okay.
Hey Pat, have you noticed any changes as far as them implementing the storage groups to other areas besides the videos? Have they done something similar for photos or what else? Music.
I haven't noticed anything. To be honest with you, as far as the storage groups go, I just create I just use the default because I normally just, have all my hard drives in my main box. So I really haven't messed with that a whole lot, but just breezing around the menus, I don't see anything drastically different. Looks the same to me. And I'm pretty sure they haven't done anything with music.
Yeah.
I think they were still talking about
it. They really need to change that.
Yeah.
That's one area.
They were talking on the mailing list about how, trying to get some feedback from the users and stuff as far as ideas about how to rewrite that thing, but they haven't done it yet.
Yeah. My suggestion was
like,
look at what XBMC has and just go in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's an awesome audio player that they have in there, the music player now.
Mm-hmm. But, with all
like
the...
They've done quite a bit with the storage groups there. For one, you should now be able to play a full ISO file if you just rip a DVD to an ISO versus an MKV or an AVI or something like that. You should be able to play the full ISO. I guess it would be with all the menuing and everything like that right from the storage group, which was previously unavailable after they implemented storage groups initially. They have it's an improved playback and performance via remote storage groups as well. So I imagine we might be able to mount our NAS boxes, Pat, as a remote storage group versus a, mounting it over NFS, maybe something like that. I have to look into that a little bit further to see what they're doing with that. And looks like they can. Yeah, there's some other back end stuff, for specifying which or selecting which storage group or which storage directory in a group can get selected based upon, disk percentage free and stuff like that. Yes, a bunch of back-end stuff with the storage groups. So maybe they needed to do some work beforehand with the storage groups before they can kind of move it forward with the rest of the pieces that are going to require it. But I would really like them to have that in place for pictures and for music.
Would make setups a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
On your
Although honestly, I've been moving all of my music online to like Google Music and stuff like that. And if there would at some point be a way to pull that stuff in, and play it. The problem that I have now is I can't get anything that plays in the browser to play audio over HDMI. And so I've been messing around with trying to get all the right settings in place for that. And I still have kind of come up short with that. So I'll have to poke around a little bit deeper to see what I can do there. The interface itself works fine, watching a recording or watching a movie or something like that. But if I open up a browser and try to do any audio, Pandora, whatever, over that, I don't get any audio coming from the browser over HDMI. So if
really?
You guys know of any tricks for that, then let me know. But I haven't been able to get that to work. So
my experience with the HDMI is, especially with my front and my Zotac box, the only way I get the audio over HDMI to work is by creating an ASON configuration entry.
Okay.
I know other people say that, you can go into and into your ALSA mixer and unflip the mutes and whatnot. For me, I have to go in and create an ASON configuration file.
Right.
But I don't have that problem, which you just described. I'll give you an example. For instance, I'd forgotten... When I first set up the box, I forgot to set up Chuck. So I missed recording one of the episodes. So me and my wife, we sat down and we fired up Hulu through the browser and we watched the episode through there.
And it worked fine?
Yeah, the sound worked fine. But like I said, I go in with HDMI. I go in and I set up that file, the configuration file.
What does Hulu broadcast in? Is that Flash?
Yeah, I think it's Flash.
See, I wonder if this is an issue with the browsers and the HTML5 clients, which, Google Music, Pandora, they're all HTML5 clients now, I believe. So I'm wondering if the browsers just don't support at least the HTML5 pages that do audio like that don't support it.
Now they're using Chromium now, right?
Yeah, I've tried Chrome and Firefox, and I haven't had any luck with either of them with that.
Yeah, that would be nice to have a Google Music plugin. I think that would be a nice thing to have.
Well, they do have the uploader, so I imagine they at some point they would be able to, you know, make that into some type of a player. Somebody did write the Google Music Frame, which you can go out and find the PPA for it, at least on Ubuntu. I imagine the devs are available and the RPMs are available for other distros. But it's I think it's just a GTK window that launches the Google Music website right inside of it, that you can run it as a native app, but it's still just launching a browser in a sense and loading that up with some type of a WebKit backend, I believe.
Yeah, Google Music is really nice. I like that a lot. I use that quite often.
I've been digging it because I had mine set up. I listen to it in the car when I'm driving around. I got the little headphone jack going into my stereo in the car, right? I got the Google TV boxes here in the house in two locations, so I can fire them up whenever I want to turn on the music somewhere. I put all the kids' music on there. They have fun dancing around and stuff like that. So, and they're even getting turned on to some of my music. So that's a good step in the right direction, I think, right?
Depends what you listen to.
Yeah, right. Well, I can only take so much kids' bop, you know?
Just be glad they're not into Justin Bieber.
Oh, yeah. Thank God.
So what are you recording now, Pat? You're not doing cable anymore. What are you just doing over the air?
Yeah, just over the air. And, I supplement that with a little bit of Netflix or Amazon On Demand or whatever. But just doing over the air. I got two HD home runs connected to an antenna in my attic. And I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, where I'm at, I don't have good line of sight for any of the over the air stations. Kind of like stuck in an in between area. And I did the research, and there's like one or two stations that I could pick up, and I'm not going to go through the trouble if I'm just going to pick up one or two stations.
Right. Well, if I ever go coax, I'll definitely be getting a HD Prime. I know y'all have had some pretty good luck with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's been working great.
We've been happy. I mean, just go look on the Silicon Dust forums and compare, the Linux forum compared to the Windows forum. And, like, the Windows forum, it must be 100 complaints in there a week. And I think the Linux one is maybe one or two postings a week. Now, some people could say, wow, that just shows that, a hell of a lot more people use Windows as opposed to Linux. I don't know about that. There's plenty of people that are running Myth, and a lot of them bought the HD Home Run Prime. It was a big deal when it first came out, and as far as I know, people are still buying it on the Linux side of things. And you read some of the postings by some of the Windows users. There's people, and they're like, this sucks, I'm going to return this thing, I'm going to put it on eBay. It sounds like they cleaned up a lot of the issues they were having, but they still have some. They were releasing firmware updates pretty often. Like almost once a week at one point, but they've slowed down quite a bit. They had, I think, in the past month and a half, I think they had like one or two. They had like one update and then just an update of the update, something minor. But it sounds like it's slowing down, and they're kind of getting to the point where it's become stable enough on the Windows side. Now, Dan, have you had any issues where, the thing would stop working after a certain point?
Not lately. They going through, you got the letter a month or so ago indicating that they were going to be upgrading the services around here, and they increased our bill like 15 or 20 bucks or whatever.
Actually, I did not get the actual letter. But
no? I got it.
I noticed the increase, though.
I got it. Right. I got it, and my parents got it. Mine said 15, theirs said 20. So I don't know. I get tired. I called them today to try and finagle it down a little bit, but they're like, well, you can get up to 25 megabit download and save $5, but it's only for a year. And so I was like, I'll just stick with the 15 for now. But since they made that change, It hasn't happened one time. Now, of course, I'm going to say that now, and it's not. And it's, and tomorrow I'm going to find that I'm going to have to redo it again, right? But the tonight, and you know, for the last, I say, month and a half, it hasn't happened. But now, also with that, I don't seem to have any issues anymore with streaming. I was having issues with streaming Amazon on demand from my LG TV and Vudu from my LG TV, and now I don't have any problems with any of those things. Netflix never really was a problem, but these other two gave me a couple issues. Amazon was fine from the Google TV box, but the TV was having issues with it. Now all of them just stream no problem. They stream fine everywhere. So I'm kind of happy with it in a sense. I'm not too happy that I'm paying an extra, you know, $15 plus taxes and stuff like that for my my service. So, but
looks like the last firmware is January 28th.
Yeah, yeah. So
that, I don't even think I've upgraded to the latest one.
I haven't either. I did. I'm maybe two back already. It was around before Christmas, I think, the last time I updated it.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had any issues, so I've you know, left it alone.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
Yep.
And it sounds like the vast majority of the fixes they're applying are for Windows machines. So.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been pretty rock solid, you know. The recordings are nice, you know, no problems. I haven't any problems, you know, watching any channels, you know, minus the movie channels.
Do you notice?
What are you going to say?
I was going to ask Pat about the files and the sizes that he's seen. Do you know, with just all the straight over the air stuff, are you noticing like either you're running out of space or, you know, they take up quite a bit or what have you seen with that?
Are you asking, have they changed over the last few months or so? I mean, it's pretty much stayed the same, far as I can tell.
Okay, and they are larger though, right? The ones that are over the air.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna look at some file sizes here, but I've got a 2 terabyte drive in there, and you know, I just let things auto expire, and really don't have a problem with it.
Right.
Yeah. How big are the HD 1080 recordings, Dan? They're like what? Anywhere between on the HD Home Run Prime. They're like what? Between 6 and 8 gig, I'd say.
Here I can tell you
in that
one
ballpark.
Second.
That sounds about right.
You're talking for an hour.
An hour, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, for 1080s.
Let's see. I see some of them like are 5. I got 5.7. Actually, it's not even finished. It's something that's recording right now. It's 5.7 gigabytes right now. Another one's at 5.3 gigabytes.
Those might be 720.
Kids shows.
What are you recording? Fringe?
Yeah.
Cause Fringe and all the Fox stuff.
Yeah, Fringe is on right
now. It's 720.
Yep. Right.
All the Fox stuff, I believe, is 720, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
You got anything from like CBS, like Hawaii 5-0 or something? That's 1080.
I'm trying to think of something that I haven't deleted. Like a half hour one was. Like, here's some from NBC. They're about 2.5 gigabytes. Actually, oh, 30 Rock, that was an hour, so that's 5.2 gigabytes.
I tell you what's enormous,
ABC
though.
ABC, dude.
I've been doing some Blu-ray rips, man. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah. They're averaging
make
size.
MKV, right?
22 gig on the low end to about 35 gig on the high end. I did Avatar, which is like 2.5 hour movie. Close to 3 hours.
Yep.
35 gig.
I might have to somehow get that from you.
Hey, that's illegal. You better have a lot of space because 35 gig.
That's why I just rip them and throw them all right on the net.
I'll tell you what, though. Like, when I play it back on my front end, you know, my little Zotac box,
mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yep.
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. Where are you streaming it from? Right from the back end, or you have it on the NAS box as well?
No. Actually, yeah, it is on the NAS.
Yeah.
So I'm going from the NAS to the back end to the front end.
Right.
And
that's the way I do it, too.
No buffering, nothing. Perfect. Nice and smooth.
Yep. Yep.
Huh. This
the
is
only thing I the only the only thing I have with the NAS box is that it shuts itself down pretty regularly. Not all the way.
It goes into sleep
like
mode.
Like a standby.
Yeah, it goes into
mode,
sleep.
Standby mode. And I'll hit the button on the thing to play a new movie or play a movie or something like that or a workout or whatever I'm doing. And the screen will pop up for a second and then just kind of die. And then, okay, I got to wait for the thing to wake up. I hear all 4 drives spin up and then I'm good to go.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's normal. First time when it's in sleep mode, it's been sitting for a while. You haven't accessed it. It goes to sleep. You know, you say you access a picture or a music file. You know, there's a little, mm-hmm. You know, couple seconds, maybe 4 or 5 seconds before it starts up. Same thing with the video too. But after that, once it's awake and it's running, no delay whatsoever.
Yep, that's the same thing that I see too.
Pat, you had a question?
I was just looking at comparing two files, Fringe and NCIS, and I was expecting NCIS to be bigger than Fringe, but it's not. It's the opposite.
Maybe NCIS is 720 also.
No, it's 1080i.
Yeah, maybe they do some compression.
Huh.
Interesting.
That's over strange. The air, though?
Yeah.
They might do it. They might do some compression, depending on who it is.
Yeah, you know, they started splitting those
over the air.
Well, they can split their signal into like three different channels now. So they've got to be doing something different, I would think. Fringe was 6.2 gig and NCIS was 5.5.
That's not bad at all.
But hey, it looks good to me.
Yeah, but the HD Home Run Prime is a solid device. I've been very happy with it.
Definitely. Yep, me too.
You know, it's nice being able to record three things at once.
I do look forward to when they would be able to get things like HBO and whatnot right over that device. You know, if it will ever, I doubt it will ever, but if it will ever, it would be really nice to be able to do that.
Well, that's an operating system thing. It's the stupid copy flag.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm tempted to contact them at Silicon Dust to make a companion box to this one that just does component. It's kind of like how the HD PVR is, so I can just throw them on the network somewhere and just can like forget about them, because the boxes just run. They never have any issue. I have an issue periodically where I'll lose audio on my HD PVR and I got to reboot just that box itself, you know, the little you know, external USB box. But it's far and few between, you know. I would like it though if I could just throw them all on the network somewhere and just be, you know, forget about them in a sense.
Honestly, the only thing I use my PVR 1212 for is like the premium movie channels. I set up the Prime as the first tuner, and 95% of what I record's gone through that.
Yep, me too.
It's only the oddball movie, you know, on Showtime or, you know, whatever, one of those shows.
Yeah, the Game of Thrones is coming back out soon, so
yeah, gonna turn the HBO back on. Yeah, that's an excellent show. I enjoyed that a lot.
I'm digging the books too. I mean, I just started today the third one, the third book in that series, and they are some long ass books.
Walking Dead.
Each one's like around eight, nine hundred pages.
That's a lot. Walking Dead is starting up, I think, in about a week.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they did a split season, and the first part was terrible. I thought it was...
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't good at all. The ending was... The last episode, you know, the mid-season cliffhanger, so to speak, was pretty good, you know, but it was just so drawn out. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's better the second half.
Yeah, I think I watched the first season on Netflix. Don't they have it on Netflix, Walking Dead?
Yeah, it's great, the first season. Excellent. Absolutely excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what else are you watching, Pat? What's on your record list?
Well, we're all recording Fringe right now.
Three
more minutes.
Just ending in about 4 minutes.
Yeah, man, I love that show. It's great.
Yeah, I dig that show a lot, too.
Yeah. I record, you know, all the late-night shows. Well, not all of them, but I record Jimmy Fallon, David Letterman, and, you know, I just set it to where I can keep 5 copies of those shows. And they just, you know, record over each other after 5. You know, and some of the sitcoms, you know, 30 Rock and stuff like that. And, of course, NFL football, record all those every Sunday. Of course, season's over now, but, you know, love that stuff.
That's a great feature, right? I don't think we've mentioned it all that often on here, but the fact that you can set something up to record, like, you know, either every week or every day or something like that. I do that with my kids' shows all the time. I say, keep a maximum of 2 of them and just blow away whatever the oldest one happens to be. And then it will just record a new Dora the Explorer today, another one tomorrow, and it just keeps filing them out of the thing. Or, you know, what's the other one? They like, there's Jake and the Neverland Pirates, and, you know, there's a bunch of them that they like, and I, you know, throw one on here and there for them, stuff like that. And it's always a new one. To them, it's always a new one, I should say. You know, my kids are, you know, 3 and 5, so they're always excited to see a different one in the list. So.
Yeah, my 4-year-old watches that show. He loves that show.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the recording features are super options. Convenient.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Super convenient. More so than the TiVo ever was. It was more or less just record this one thing or record the whole season of something or just set it up to record in this time, you know, at this time slot. Whatever happens to be there, we'll record.
I like with, you know, the new shows.
You have so many more. Yeah.
With the new shows, I say record any time on that channel. It'll record an episode. It sees that it was recorded, and it won't record that episode again.
Yep.
Right.
Unless you override it and tell it to.
And I also dig the fact that you can push it by like 3 minutes or so, or you know, if you need to set up a different time for it to end. Like my wife wanted to watch The Voice that was just started back up right after the Super Bowl. Okay, well, I had no idea when the Super Bowl was really going to end, even though they said it was going to end at like 10 o'clock, and this was supposed to start at 10:30. And I said, well, let me set it to, you know, start recording at 10:30 and give it an extra hour just in case the game were for some reason go long, you know, so I could just go in and say, you know, add 60 minutes to the end time on the thing. And then I just back that off. And then when it gets back into its normal recording, you know, routine and stuff like that. So it's nice to be able to have that flexibility.
Yeah, I do that with every live sporting event. I add 60 minutes to it in case it goes to OT or something.
Yeah, every hockey game that I record is like that.
Yeah.
So I record every Flyers game that rolls around, and not that I've been too happy with them lately, but you know, but it's just nice that I can just say, hey, add 30 minutes to the game time and be done with it, just in case they happen to go to yet another shootout which they lose.
Yeah, I normally set up most of my recordings via Myth Web too. Just find it easier on the web. Yeah.
Yeah, because the interface when you go to the search, not the program listing, but the actual finder, the program finder that's in there, sometimes it's got to index so much of that data that it takes a while for it to populate. I've noticed, and I don't know if it's just because it's loading up, you know, 2 weeks worth of data across, you know, 4 different tuners for me. So I don't know if that's the reason that it takes so long or whatever, but it does seem to take quite a while to populate through that. And from a remote control, if you don't have the right paging set up on your remote control so you can, you know, skip down a page versus going one at a time, that takes a long time to get through some of those listings. So the Myth Web always just seemed to be just an easier thing to do. Plus, I can do it from my phone. You know, as I said, mentioned The Voice, you know, we were at a Super Bowl party, and my wife's like, oh, did you set that up to record? I was like, no, I whipped out my phone, did it right there. And I was able to just hop on MythWeb and take care of it, no problem.
Yeah.
I've done that plenty of times.
Oh, yeah. Yep. My son will be like, you know, we will be like eating dinner. He's like, Daddy, record this show at 10 o'clock tonight. I grab my phone and I turn, you know, I page through it. Okay, done.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping then with the Myth services when I can actually get a machine that's up and running with 25 on it to put together an Android app to let you go in and do that type of stuff. I really like what they've done with, if you look at the videos for the iPad app that they have to make an iPad a front end. Well, we need to do the same thing for the Android platform, and I'm hoping to be able to do some of that, you know, once I actually have a full-blown 25 up and running.
Yeah, that'd be good. I knew you were going to work on that, so I said, well, maybe I should work on the web interface. I'd kind of like to just have a plain Jane web page that I could do all this stuff with. But like we were talking earlier in the month or last month about the JSON data that they're putting out is not JSONP. It doesn't have the callback function. So
right.
You know, I don't want to have to.
I've been looking into that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You said you were looking into it. What'd you find?
Yeah, I've been looking into it. I've been putting together an HPR series on doing this type of stuff alone, and I've been looking at what it actually takes to produce that special type of JSON where it's called with padding. JSONP stands for JSON with padding, and really all you have to do is is capture the function name that they're passing in, because what they do is in the URL, they will pass in a function name that's going to be the callback function, and the resulting JSON data just gets wrapped with that function name and an opening and closing paren around the JSON data. And then the return type needs to be the MIME type application/JavaScript versus application/JSON. So if your service isn't producing the appropriate wrapper around the return data, and your MIME types not expecting application/JavaScript, instead you're doing just application/JSON, it might end up failing for you. So you kind of have to play with whatever your the MIME type that you're passing in and expecting back, and making sure that we'll have to see about the server if it can make sure that the JSON gets wrapped with the appropriate padding.
Right, but you agree that if the server is not capable of that, then you're pretty much SOL, right?
Right. Yeah. For the time being, unless they put a fix in to handle that. Yep. Right. And what I find with the work that I've done on other Android applications and producing JSON data, specifically for the Open Schedule application, I'm not limited like I am with web pages with having the requests come from the same origin which the data is being produced. In other words, that means if I try to produce a JSON result from, say, a Google search, if I query their the Google API, I would never be able to do that because my server doesn't say that I am from google.com. I would have to do the JSON P in that respect. The Android applications don't seem to have that limitation because my Android application doesn't come from any domain at all. So I would just query it for a JSON response, and I'm able to return the data no problem to the phone.
Right, right.
So the Mist Services API is doing just that. So I don't think that there will be any issue with an Android application or an Android tablet, being able to query that data appropriately and being able to stream the data or stream the videos and whatnot, from that. From making those calls to the device.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. You won't have any problem with that, consuming that JSON data. But what I was trying to do was just create a simple web page just using JavaScript.
Right.
Be able to take that JSON data and do something with it rather than build a heavyweight web app, which is what I did in GWT.
Right.
And, the chances of somebody... If I was to release this out to the public, the chances of somebody making the effort to, number one, install Java, number two, have Tomcat or Jetty running all the time, and installing my WAR file are slim to none.
Yeah, but that sounds like a lot of hoops.
If I could just create a JavaScript page and consume this data and say, hey, just throw this page in your web directory and you'll be good to go. The chances of somebody doing that are, a lot higher.
Right. Could you run that right inside of Myth and inside of Myth Web? Could you just put that your JavaScript page right inside of Myth Web and just expose that either through another port or just another context on Myth Web? You shouldn't have that problem then, I don't think, right?
Yeah, because it requires it to be on the same port as well. And you can't be on the same port because that's dedicated to that services API.
Yeah. I'll have to think about that a little bit more.
Is that
but yeah?
We,
when you make a call, when oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say we could submit a patch or something, but I don't really know what's it written in C++.
The services. I'm not sure what the services are written in.
I think it's C++. Yeah.
I'm gonna look it up here. It most likely is. A lot of that backend stuff, I believe, it's either going to be C or C++, one of the two.
Mm. Yeah, that iPad app was pretty impressive. How far he's gotten with that? He's able to stream shows, and it looked real nice, very native. It didn't look like a web app at all. It looked like a nice native application.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah.
It's only a matter of time till somebody does it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got mine, theoretically working. I could pull the page up and you have to go in there and you say, you list all your recordings that you have, and then you say, let's transcode this one, and then it sends you back the URL for that page. And you know, you might want to wait like 20 seconds or something before you try to consume it. But
yeah,
it was funny. I could pass that URL to my Android devices that was running, I guess, Honeycomb or whatever it was, and they didn't know what to do with it. But I just recently installed CM9 on this Galaxy Tab, and it consumes the file fine and starts playing the video. It's the video playback is jerky. I've messed around with the bit rate and all that kind of stuff, but I still can't get it right. But you know, the basics are there. It you know, you list your recordings, you say go ahead and transcode this one, it sends you back the URL, and you know, consume that on whatever device you want. So all the pieces are there. It's just a matter of putting it all together.
How does it determine what bit rate to do the transcode in? Does it like ping your device and see what it can handle?
No, it has a default, and then but you can override that to whatever you want to. So what I did was just made a page with all the parameters, you know, little text boxes that have the defaults in there, and then you can just tweak them, you know, and try different things until you get it right for that device. But I would imagine you could, you know, interrogate your screen size and determine, you know, what bit rate you want to do it as and what your width and height is and all that kind of stuff. Shouldn't be hard to do.
I would imagine you would probably want to have like a default set of different settings, you know, different quality settings, and I guess whatever it's closest to, that's what it goes to.
Yeah, have a list of devices that with these particular settings or something. That would be nice.
Yeah. Right, you have like a profiles list, and you figure out what it's closest to on the fly.
You're talking about the Android device itself, right? Not the.
Well, when you go
getting
to set
those,
up
getting
the,
those dimensions, right?
Yeah, you can get the dimensions off the device, and then when you go to start the live stream, you just tell it what those dimensions are and all that good stuff.
Right. Yeah, in the Android API, you can query, you know, for what your screen, you know, resolution is and all that kind of stuff, and maybe it's an issue of switching whether you're on Wi-Fi or on 3G, you know, to determine what you want to make the best, you know, or the highest quality you want to allow at that point. Because if you're on Wi-Fi, you shouldn't have any issue at all. Other than, you know, if it's you're on Wi-Fi outside of your own home network, I would say if you're on your own home network, you should be able to just stream it at whatever, you know, highest quality you want
if
you want to. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever the CPU or the device can handle.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's really kind of interesting too is that if I was talking about it on Google Plus a while back, but at CES there was a group there. They weren't showing off products specifically that they showed, but they had this cable that you hook into your television that then also hooks into your, you know, micro USB port on your phone or your tablet. And it allows you to control, like, pick up your TV's remote control and control the actions on the tablet itself. I'm trying to think what it was. It was like MHT or something like that. But it was multimedia over HDMI or something like that. And it could, one, power your phone or tablet; two, allow you to control it from your TV's remote control. It could send the commands back over that wire to the tablet. And then three, stream HD, you know, full 1080, I think it was full 1080p streaming right off of the tablet or the phone or whatever the highest that the phone could do. So think about that, is you could actually take your phone and have that be your front end wherever you want it to be, you know, and still be able to use the remote control. It would access your, you know, on your home network, of course, it would access, you know, your back end system and stream the content right to it, you know, over your Wi-Fi, and then right onto your big screen TV in full 1080p quality if you wanted. So I mean, it's really pretty amazing that you'd be able to do that. You know, if in fact we do have some type of an app that can get the content.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I think they showed them playing games, like, and everything like that. You know, they pretty much held the phone there as the controller. And we're looking at the TV, and they were doing. It was pretty neat. It was pretty neat stuff that they were showing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to being able to put an ice cream sandwich ROM on my my ViewSonic G tablet, which I bought over a year ago. So they just put it over, and it's in like an alpha stage to the port. And CyanEngine Mod is that's happening pretty quickly too. So I'm sure it'll be sooner than later that we'll get an ice cream sandwich build of that. That's what 9 is based on, right?
Yeah, ice cream sandwich. And this one I'm running is kind of alpha too. There, I've had a couple of bugs here and there, but I was just dying to get the Chrome beta on Android and test that out.
Yeah, right.
And that is pretty cool. Yeah, that's nice.
Which Galaxy Tab do you have?
The 10.1.
Oh, okay.
Just the Wi-Fi only.
I've been looking. I have the original Galaxy Tab, and I was looking to see what I could do to get ICE put onto there. And so far, I've been turning up short with being able to get access to that. I don't think CyanEngine Mod supports that device.
The original Galaxy Tab?
Huh, I would have thought there would have been a...
Yeah. It might have changed in recent months, so, but it's been a while since I looked.
Yeah.
Silence. We got anything else, guys, or we're done?
I guess we're good.
I didn't have anything. Did you cover everything you wanted to talk about, Patrick, with your 25?
Yeah, pretty much. I thought it was interesting the way the transcoding works. It creates this M3U8 file extension, and it in the actual files that are transcoded, it transcodes them into .ts files that are only like 10 seconds long a piece. And so this M3U file is basically a playlist. And it just lists all these little segments. And the player just goes through here and, plays the first 10-second segment and just goes down through the list there.
Interesting.
And I just thought that was kind of a interesting way to do it.
That is really neat. Yeah, that is really neat.
What the benefits are.
Go ahead. When I was messing with it before with getting the stream, I had to have a whole separate streaming and transcoding server set up, and I ended up going with like a Darwin server, and I had to do all of the transcoding beforehand so that I could transcode them down to what did I do it to a an AMR, I think it was an AMR file. Which was for low audio bit rates, low video bit rates, stuff like that, but still seemed to play fine and look fine, especially over 3G. I was able to stream it over 3G with no problem, and but you had to have a whole separate server set up, you had to have a whole separate transcoding process set up, and then you had to either flag everything to just transcode it automatically for you, or just flag what you wanted to, but then you had to have a separate cleanup routine to go and delete all those
files.
Sounds
like a
once
mess.
Say you deleted something. Oh, it was. It was a hack job. I mean, I got it working, but it was a hack job, to say the least. So, I mean, this will be much nicer. This will be a much nicer solution.
Sounds like it's much simpler.
Yeah, just the idea that you don't have to transcode every file, because you don't want to watch every file on some little handheld device. It's just one or two that you want to watch occasionally.
Right.
And so you just want to do it on the fly, and that's what you'll be able to do now.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be great.
Dan, after you had those files transcoded and when you went to play them, did you actually have to download that file onto your device or just automatically started playing?
Nope, I just opened up when you can either open up the multimedia player, in code, you can open up the multimedia player to a local file, or you would point it to a URL and it would just stream it right off of the URL.
Okay.
I had to fix, there was at least at the time, and what are we talking of, probably a year and a half now, maybe almost 2 years ago, I think. I had to fix the there was an issue with the RSS feed that was coming off of MythWeb, and I had to also put a hack in place to fix that, because that wasn't, there was something that was broken inside of that, at least the version that I had at the time. So I was able to fix that and to get the actual right data to come out of it, and then I was able, because there was an, I think there was also an issue with the dates and times as they were being converted into the RSS feed. So I had to clean that up, and once I had everything right, then I could look at everything in the appropriate program listing, so that I could just select one and say play, and it worked. I think I even had one iteration of it where I was just using the built-in Flash player inside of MythWeb, where it was just doing, you know, streaming in Flash to the phone, which worked as well. So there were ways around it. It just wasn't as elegant as I would have liked it to have been.
Well, now you got the tools to build something really nice. So.
Yeah, I just need to get the system up and running first.
Yeah, it'll be here before you know it.
Well, guys, it's been great talking to you. Pat, it's been nice talking to you. It's been a while, but it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you all again. What do you think about Self this year? Are you going to make it?
I don't think I'm going to make Self.
Definitely.
No?
I'll be down there.
You will?
I'm going to put in to be doing a talk, I think, as well, which is based on that HPR series I've been talking about.
Okay, good. Yeah, I listened to your first episode, man. It was good. Well,
yeah, the second one should be out. The second one should be out very shortly. I think it's probably be next week, I guess. Or I have to go look and see if they actually put it out on the schedule yet or not. But I had the first. I uploaded the first two of them, and actually, I'll send you the URL too for where you can play with the server.
Okay. Cool.
Excellent. Well, everybody.
Yeah. So Self will be in Charlotte this year, right?
Oh, they're changing it, right? Charlotte.
Yep. Charlotte, North Carolina. So a little bit further for me to drive, but should be nice anyway.
Yeah, that's a good place to have it because that's a major airline hub. You can get some pretty cheap airfare there.
Yeah. Well, we'll miss you.
Can't go to everyone, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, anybody, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you real soon, and enjoy. Take care.
We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Each other biologically, to the earth chemically, to the rest of the universe
atomically. I think nature's imagination is so much greater than man's. She's never gonna let us relax.
We live in an in-between universe where things change all right, but according to patterns, rules, or as we call them, laws of nature.
I'm this guy standing on a planet. Really, I'm just a speck compared with a star. The planet is just another speck. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space. There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of spark stuff. We are a wave. The cosmos can know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns.
We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
We're all connected to each other biologically, to the earth chemically. The rest of the universe
atomic. I find it elevating and exhilarating to discover that we live in a universe which permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle as we.
I know that the molecules in my body are traceable to phenomena in the cosmos. That makes me want to grab people saying, have you heard this?
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of spark stuff. We are a wave. The cosmos can know itself.
There's this tremendous mass of waves all over in space, which is the light bouncing around the room, going from one thing to the other. And it's all really there, really, really there. But you gotta stop and think about it, about the complexity to really get the pleasure. It's all really there, really, really there. The inconceivable nature of nature. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness.
emptiness of space.
There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of space.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together.
The cosmos is also within us.
We're made of sparks,
but we are away.
The cosmos can know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are others, and we've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.